This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
By the Book on BFM 89.9.
Hello, everyone. You're listening to By the Book with me, Sharmila Ganesan. And with me, as always, my fellow explorer of issues related to gender, Lee Chui Lin.
Hello. I thought you were just going to say straight up feminist.
I was, but then this book kind of calls that term into question a little bit.
Yes,
so
that's true.
I thought I'll rein it in a little bit. It's our monthly book club episode, and as usual, we have someone else joining us to, well, discuss a book. Today we have with us Janelle Tan from Awam. Thank you for joining us, Janelle.
Thank you very much for having me again, Sharmila and Lynn.
So the book that we read this month was actually a suggestion from Janelle, and it's called What Do Men Want? Masculinity and Its Discontents by Nina Power. And I thought we'd kick things off by getting you to tell us why you picked that particular title.
Well, to be very frank, it was my first time coming across this title. I only came across it earlier this year, but I didn't heed too much about it. It was part of my book list. It's just that I've never gotten to it. And since you guys approached me, I thought, you know what? I might as well take this opportunity to read this book. But yeah, so that's how that book came about.
I have to say, and I think this is worth saying early on, that I have ambivalent feelings about this book. There are parts of it that struck me as offering some very useful ways about conversations when it comes to gender and masculinity. There are other things about it that really didn't rub me the right way. So I'm actually glad because I'm looking forward to hear what the both of you thought. Lynn, what were your initial reactions?
Yeah, so we've talked about this a little bit. I think that there are elements of the book that toss up ideas that are interesting, especially interesting in today's particular cultural tenor and temperature. I think that some of the ideas that she's putting forward, while not unspoken or not things that have never been discussed, have perhaps been recently more sidelined. And so some of that I thought was very interesting. Like you, there were some elements that I found problematic, which we can talk about later. But mostly, my largest issue with it, and it is a structural one, is that it reads to me a little bit like an essay that was extended into a book. And I think that that perhaps comes down to the title's very catchy, right? What Do Men Want? It's essentially a subversion of like a rom-com trope from whenever it was that we were still doing those kinds of films. And so I understand why the title is as snappy as that. But I felt like perhaps the conversations with men in the book were not as fully fleshed out as I would have liked, as the title kind of promised.
So the title gives you a clue into what the book is about. And essentially the book and Nina Power are interested in breaking down the place of men and masculinity within today's cultural context. And I think it's worth saying, which the author acknowledges, it comes from a fairly Western perspective in terms of gender roles. And I think she draws on a lot of things, right? The so-called gender spectrum, but also how over time, as feminism has evolved to equalize, or rather she says, equalize the roles both at home and at work between men and women, that perhaps we are seeing a loss of identity, a loss of a place to belong for men. And the thesis of the book, as it were, has a lot to do with we need to reach across the aisle and understand where men and their discontents are coming from. And again, hence the title, right? Janelle, I wanted to ask you, what did you take away from this book ultimately? Or what was the big sort of learning point?
I mean, to be very frank, I guess the most obvious message that comes to me is that, unfortunately, nothing is simple. Like masculinity versus femininity, gender versus sex. I don't know. It seems to me that our society is bent on, because I guess it goes down to human nature as well, and how neuroscience informs us about how we behave and how we perceive and everything. So we are very much attuned to ascribing characteristics and coming up categories, and I think that's how we work. So in that sense, I can see where she's coming from, because she did, I mean, do correct me if I sort of, you know, like misrepresent anything, but it seems that to her, like, we shouldn't stray too far from taking off the labels of masculinity and femininity. I think to some extent she does acknowledge that, which I do agree, in light of how we function as human beings and how our society operates. But what really strikes me as something very important to bear in mind is how she tries to get across, at least to me, that everything is nuanced. You can't overgeneralize everything, whether it's men, whether it's women, whether it's their characteristics, whether it's even relationships. I know that there are some parts of the book where, for example, I think she did try to venture into segregation. Like she said that if you're too specific about everything, or if you get too preoccupied with, for example, labels of abuse, which I not necessarily fully agree with how she go on about it, but she went along lines where if you get too specific about abuse, you may actually end up being in this consequence where people will just take one step back and not engage with anyone at all. For me, that's actually very ironic because on one hand, she's trying to put forward the message that you have to be nuanced about everything. But on the other hand, I feel like she's going, she's very pissed off in that direction. So for me, it seems like this whole communication, I mean, when it comes to juggling ideas, concepts and everything, I guess it really boils down to personal reflection and seeing how you understand a particular thing or a particular person by situation or by factor, and you cannot be too quick to jump to conclusions about anything and everything and expect everything to be a one-size-fits-all approach. I guess it's an iterative process. That's, I think, the most important message that I brought home from this book.
I love that you brought that up, partly because I feel as if reading this book is a tiered experience. So I think on the one hand, if you read it expecting there to be snappy writing, for example, I don't think that she's a particularly snappy writer. But on the other hand, if you read it and want to engage with the larger idea that she's putting across and not necessarily the more granular points that she's making, like, for example, what you brought up about abuse, or for that matter, her takes on online conversations, which I did not necessarily think were representative of how most conversations actually take place. But if you engage with the larger idea, then I agree with you that there's actually quite a lot to unpack there in terms of her saying that there is a gap perhaps in the modern male experience that we're not contending with in terms of how that might then feed into how men are feeling about the way they engage with other men, with women. So I think those ideas, like you, Janelle, are interesting to grapple with. What I wish is that they were arguments that were made in a stronger or maybe more certain language. But I feel as if her determination to be nuanced or to always say, but I don't mean all men and I don't mean all women. And actually, I just mean some people. that, I think, started to eat at me after it came up a number of times.
Yeah, so the structure of the book, right, largely, and the way she writes about any of her thoughts or her the conclusions that she's arrived at generally is like, so she lays it out. And when she lays it out at the start, I always felt like, oh, there's a lot of promise. Mm. So for instance, she would lay out, how do we figure out what dating might mean when men may not know when flirting becomes uncomfortable, right? It's a legitimately interesting question. But then the problem is when she starts breaking it down, by the end, I usually feel like, yeah, but I don't think we've arrived anywhere though. Like, you're good at bringing up the questions, but you don't necessarily answer them to the fullest extent that they should be. You don't even take a position. And I think perhaps that's what, as I saw this pattern being repeated, because another very interesting point and something that's been brought up before is the lack of father figures. So she makes a great point, and it is actually an important thing that needs to be discussed. How do we raise good men when they may not have role models? And in fact, what does even being a good man mean, right? And then she points out how perhaps that's why men then end up veering towards unhealthy role models, not perhaps the best ways in which to define manhood. But then there isn't a lot of solutions given either, right? So at the end, I think it was a feeling of, you have these thoughts that you put across, but I'm not left with much after. And for me, that was the biggest disappointment of the book.
I guess for me, because generally for me, it doesn't matter whether it's movies or books, right? I guess my general take is somehow I would just go in and I would just watch or read and I'll take the good points, and that's about it. Like, for some reason, I haven't come across any drastic disappointments. So, yeah, I'm just in awe whenever you guys actually so objectively and so critically manage to critique the movies and the books that you guys, discuss. For me, it's always magical because somehow I can find good stuff or I can find instructive stuff to speak about, but somehow I don't really take a very strong stance, as in, like, I won't be able to communicate disappointment. So with regards to what you said, Sharmila, about how she has been thought-provoking, that one I definitely can identify with. But what you said about disappointing parts, for me, that's actually quite new because I didn't go as far as that. But I have to say about the father figures thing, just I don't know as much because I didn't do as much reading. But what it distinctly reminds me is, I think, Freud's psychoanalytic tradition. I think he does go into quite a bit about the father figure for anyone who's interested. I think there's a lot of abundant materials online, and I myself will go into it. But it seems that this father figure, from what I vaguely remember, it's on one hand, the absence of father figures is one thing, but if you were to relate it very vaguely to other symbols, for example, God, right? God is very omnipotent. Like, there's no face, there is no exact figure that someone can relate to, like how a mom can be relatable to a child. So through the God image, for example, at least to me, it has this air of superiority. So I guess you can relate it generally to how, culturally speaking, man has had this superior position. So I guess maybe to some extent in this society where you have all, where societal conditions are drastically different from, the past, you have capitalism, you have short-termism and all that stuff, perhaps this father figure absence phenomenon may have imposed a different effect on men, and that may contribute to the lack of purpose. At least that's what I can generally gauge on my end from the book. Lack of purpose that men may feel, the emptiness, how they may feel that. I mean, beyond masculinity, what else are they? Beyond their relationships with women, what are they? I think maybe that may play a role.
There was a point in the book, I think, where she talks about how, what are men if they are not defined by the women in their lives? And I thought that point made me think about how women have so many modes of defining themselves, men may not necessarily have that. We do need to take a break, but I'd love to pick up on that conversation after. We are speaking with Janelle Tan from Awam, who's here with us for our book club of the month, and we're discussing Nina Power's What Do Men Want? Send your thoughts our way. Do you enjoy books about feminism and gender and masculinity? You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio, write to us at buythebook@bfm.my.
Break from monotony. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back. You're listening to Buy the Book with Sharmila and Lynn. And joining us today, Janelle Tan from Awam. And we are doing this month's book club. We are discussing What Do Men Want? Masculinity and Its Discontents, a book by Nina Power. So I brought this up before the break, the notion of men not necessarily having a way to define what masculinity means. Was that something that this book managed to convey well enough for you guys?
So I think that the book, like you said earlier, raises interesting ideas. And I was looking forward actually to speaking with both of you about this, mostly because it is a book of questions and ideas, more so, as you said, than it is a book of solutions or conclusive findings. And similarly, with masculinity, as with everything else I'm going to say about this book, I think it's a mixed bag. So on the one hand, I really appreciate the breaking down of the experience of masculinity and what it means to be told that you are toxic or part of the patriarchy, to have those abstract words come into your experience of just being a dude, just doing dude things and going through life. And I understand, and I think that the book makes a solid argument as to why it is difficult sometimes for men, and actually for that matter for women, to engage with the more abstract concepts that we often talk about, like the patriarchy, like toxic masculinity. So those discussions, or rather those questions thrown up, interesting. However, I actually am not sure that I strictly agree with her definitions of masculinity, for example, to the attributing of certain traits to being historically or classically masculine and what it means to not have that anymore. That stuff I'm not so sure I engaged with in a fruitful way. So to answer your question in what is at this point quite a long-winded way, I think it does some of it very well. I think it definitely peppers us with a number of questions and ideas. I don't know, however, if in the end it did enough for me. And ironically enough, I think that a big part of it is because there weren't enough actual conversations with men in the book. Instead, it is a woman observing men and writing about them and presuming to say, this is probably what they want based on what they've said they want. But not actually then speaking to men, to even the men in her life or conducting informal study of some kind, which I think would have been interesting.
Actually, the whole book is a collection of quotes from other articles, quotes from online forums, from other interviews, and perhaps bits of research that other people have done. And I think that's a bit of a problem because it does feel like the book feels slight. It doesn't feel like it does enough to take on this whole very weighty topic, to be honest. And one other thing that I think persistently bothered me throughout the reading was the oversimplification of fairly important issues, things like Me Too, things like violence against women. Because I think she, in those parts, she almost comes across as an apologist for bad male behavior. And I'm not saying she is, but I think it's the hesitation to kind of commit to something. It's the hesitation to call out something and then say, again, going back to, well, perhaps this is the problem. So when she doesn't do that, it often ends up feeling like she's saying, yeah, but not all men, you know, yeah, but, you know, not everybody's toxic. Yeah, men can be good, which I'm not necessarily disagreeing with, but I am saying that it doesn't add anything new to the conversation beyond just saying that.
So with regards to the masculinity, femininity traits, characteristics, right? I feel like she's also slapping herself. But then again, I'm not sure because honestly, at this point, when it comes to a lot of the concepts, right? I don't think humans as a whole, us as a whole, I don't think even we have fully understood what is the essence of masculinity and femininity in general. Like, are we going to go all social cultural or social constructionist and say that masculinity and femininity are completely social cultural constructions and nothing of it is biological? Or are you going to be in the middle, which I honestly don't even know what the answer is at this point. All I can say is probably partially embodied, partially social cultural. I don't even know what that means. Or are you going to swing to the other way and say that, you know, are you going to root back to this, how do I say, biological characteristics and see how whether there are any biological correlates of masculinity and femininity? Honestly, I don't think we've even figured out the answers, but at least to my understanding of feminism and women's rights and all, femininity and masculinity are largely sociocultural. And so with regards to any trait-like qualities for either of these constructs, I don't feel that's productive, lah, just to be very frank. With regards to the Me Too one, I completely 100% concur with you, Shamila, because even I felt that, I don't know, I also felt like she's slapping herself as well, because on one hand, when I read that book, what I got out of that whole book is that, to be very frank, even I'm not sure. I'm not sure if she fully understood that. I mean, she did articulate it, saying that when you say something, especially online, she used online as a context, you can't fully control where it's heading to. So I don't know why she didn't apply that rational to social movements. Not that I 100% know what's the history when it comes to, you know, ideas that overwhelm the world, for example, the Enlightenment era, and, you know, you swing from one end to the other, or for that matter, to relate to the current population, how, you know, a few decades before, we may have been more liberal in general globally, but now we're swinging towards conservatism. And basically, it's like a pendulum where you're going to swing from one end to the other, depending on current affairs, right? So similarly, for social movements, like for me, I guess my takeaway is, yes, I to some extent agree with her that in light of so many social cultural narratives that are ongoing, and not to mention the increasing importance of women's rights and gender equality, to a great extent, it's inevitable that the Me Too movement will take place. But for me, it's quite simple. I guess you should leverage on this movement to make this cause as visible as possible, because after all, we cannot deny that the majority of survivors are women, and the fact still stands that underreporting is still very much pervasive. So I understand that she's not denying it, but her tone is essentially going to make half of the world's population feel, at least those who have experienced some gender-based violence, they make them feel like, oh, I'm not being taken seriously. Like, why are you ignoring my voices? But I also understand, and I know it's crazy, it's very nuanced, but at the same time, as much as we have to amplify the issue of violence against women and how we should reduce the barriers to reporting and also prevention, we should also provide space for the voices of, for example, male survivors and others. Bringing that up, I guess we have to go back, I think, to what she said earlier in the book, something about victimhood. I don't know if you guys remember. Something about infinite suffering going around, and she's trying to debunk this idea about finite suffering, finite empathy, and to not make the cycle of power and exploitation a vicious one, whereby we shouldn't be stepping over male superiority and
the answer to empower women isn't to put down men, basically.
Yeah, I thought that it'd be good to go back to that, because I know that, I guess, for everything, even for every social woman, there's always a threshold. But the thing is, the threshold in many ways is not within even my control. It's we're talking about dynamics of the masses here, and even one person's thought or behavior can go a long way in influencing the currents of change, if I put it correctly. So I guess all we can do is try to, you know, influence the current and make it as productive as possible, and do our share in making it as inclusive as possible. I don't know. I mean, this is all I can say at this point.
I have a question to close off our segment, actually, and I think that it might be in some ways a central one to the idea of the book, which is, does this book help to facilitate conversation between men and women? Or not conversation, but conversation, empathy, understanding. Does it do that job? Because she is actually quite explicit about this. I think by now, all three of us have established that. In other ways, she can be quite vague. but she set out her desire for the book quite clearly in the front, which is that she wants us to go back to a space where we can share space, where men and women can be in a setting together and play and converse and deal with difficult ideas. Does her book contribute towards that utopian idea?
Your question is a sneaky one, Lynn, because honestly, I started the show thinking that I wouldn't recommend this book to people, mostly because I feel like it doesn't get anywhere in terms of hitting a solution. However, now that you've asked me this question, I will say, though, that while reading the book, there were many points that in my head I marked out to myself, oh, I must talk about this with this friend. I must talk about this with that man I know. I must talk about this with this friend I know who's married and has these challenges with her partner. So I guess in a way that kind of puts me in a place of saying, yes, I actually think the book in one package brings up points that does facilitate that conversation. Successfully or not, I'm not sure.
So I view it as a conversation starter, because like you, so I was very much looking forward to our chat today, partly because I kept having imaginary chats while reading the book and thinking, okay, sometimes I was talking to Nina Power because I'm like, I just don't agree with you. There are things that I really disagree with you on that I wish we could talk out in real time. In other instances, I was like, oh, I wonder what Janelle's going to say about this. And other things, I thought, you know what? Like you, I want to talk to partners, friends. I need to find out how men might feel responding to this book that is ostensibly about them, but is also ultimately about women. So yeah, I think I wouldn't necessarily recommend it to every single person. I think it's kind of a targeted recommendation, but it is an easy conversation starter and it's a slim book.
I completely agree with both of you in that it's a very good conversation starter. I also would agree with Lynn in saying that it's a targeted recommendation, because if you're going to go in reading this book expecting answers to certain questions, you're not going to get them. I think you need to be prepared to do your own reflections. Basically, you have to use her, whatever that she's saying, whatever that you're gaining from what she says, and just see. I think it's a personal journey from that point forward. So in that sense, for anyone who is keen on doing this, then it's a great one. I would say this book, to some extent, may be a challenge for certain feminists, I guess. That means, I mean, not everyone, it will not be it will not be every feminist's cup of tea. Because for me, I guess when I opened this book, I sort of told myself that no matter what, I'm not going to go all defensive internally in my head. Because ultimately, it's stuff like this that can get me, for example, shut down about what this person may have to say and not being able to see her perspective. And yeah, because ultimately feminism, one of the values of feminism is being able to be inclusive. And part of being inclusive is being able to listen to that person's perspective and see how, you know, like, and somehow, you know, be open to the possibility that you may not agree with that person at the outset, but there actually may be certain things where you might agree with them or you might see where they're coming from. So for me, it's a very good exercise to not go defensive. And I would say one good thing for me when it comes to this book is that when it comes to certain descriptions about masculinity and men, right, I think going back to what both of you say, I feel that you may be able to relate to men and guys a lot better. Certain things that this book touched on, especially about the part about masculinity and the emptiness, is that I don't think that's something that a lot of people generally, like, this is just my assumption, not many people may even be aware of it. I don't think even men themselves may be aware of it. While toxic masculinity, for that matter, I was only aware of it as far as, you know, lack of emotional expression, the invulnerability, etc. But it never occurred to me to dig deeper beyond, especially the concept of invulnerability. So this, I think, can be very good to engage you with men and boys. And for me personally, the examples brought out, so for example, the no-fat movement, the MG toll. Well, first thing, I didn't really know much about this phenomenon in the first place, but the first reaction that I got was I was actually surprised, because if you were to ask me, I think the public would probably get similarly as to how Nina Powers has highlighted. I think at the upfront, the public would probably have certain negative reactions because it doesn't align with certain expectations of masculinity, and again that ties back to men's relationship with women, right? So for me, that has been empowering for me in understanding those men a bit more better, and for me that is a very important reminder. It serves as a very important reminder because from my daily work, I've seen my fair share of blaming of the other sex or the other gender. Sometimes it can be very easy to get into that. And for me, it's a very important reminder, especially in my position in the women's rights movement, to not perpetuate that narrative. And also to, you know, share with others as well, to not go into those generalizations, because every person is going to be different. Again, going back to her very general message, every man and woman is going to be different. There are certain things that you can go by in trends and patterns, but you should, it only goes up to a certain point. And beyond that, you have to be a lot more nuanced in how you, you know, see others. So I guess that's my take.
Jurnelle, thanks for suggesting this book to us.
Thank you.
We've been talking about What Do Men Want? Masculinity and Its Discontents by Nina Power for our monthly book club. And we were doing that with Jurnelle Tan from AWAM. Let us know, are you a fan of reading about gender issues, feminism, masculinity? You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio, write to us at buythebook@bfm.my. And that brings us to Footnotes, where we're talking about book talk.
Well, actually, we're talking about the TikTok book club, because that's what book talk has
spawned.
Yeah, has evolved into. So for the uninitiated, book talk is an incredibly popular hashtag, over 64.3 billion views and counting on TikTok. And this is something that I think we've alluded to elsewhere on our show, the power of social media when it comes to driving, well, influences, but also book recommendations, book discussions. And I've been on the periphery of it quite a bit. So I know that people do reaction videos. I know that there are short videos, short recommendations. I don't know if that makes up the bulk of what book talk is, but that's my understanding of some of what is included. So from that, being a company recognizing an opportunity, they have now launched the TikTok Book Club, which is going to be, as what it sounds, as what we do, in fact, on the show, a discussion every month of one new book that is announced and the community kind of chimes in.
So as someone who has dipped a mere toe into the world of creating reels around books and whatever, on Instagram though, not on TikTok, I do understand the appeal. It's fun to have this community of people who get excited about even simple things. It doesn't have to be book reviews, right? Book covers, reading at a particular place, certain characters, certain genres. So there's a lot of potential. I like the idea of social media then sort of spinning off into a physical community of people sort of reading the same thing together across the world, really. I'm curious to see how it ends up. Like, what is the interactive element? Will people be recording their own TikToks with reviews? Because when you say book club, as we've just heard with Janelle earlier, part of the fun is in the back and forth and the immediacy of the discussion around the book. If this is just people posting individual reactions, what would that look like? I mean, I'm saying all of this as an outsider. I don't engage with TikTok very much, but I feel like it's a nice idea and I'm just very curious.
There's also going to be Book Talk Laureates. So the conversation is actually going to be led by a group of TikTokers who are actually going to, you know, dive into the novel, create content based on that, and actually host a live session, which is where I guess the back and forth and the tuning in and being able to chime in real time is going to come in. I love the idea of creating community around books. I think that communities ultimately will go where people are. And so I'm not here to be sniffy about where it is that these communities or discussions take place. Right now, there's a lot of people on TikTok. There's a lot of people on social media. Stands to reason that that's where you want to have that conversation. That being said, this is my cynical take on it. While I love the idea of people discussing books, more people reading, for example, the first book that they've chosen is Jane Austen's Persuasion, and that's fine. No problem with that. However, there is a Netflix adaptation of the novel that is out. And I think that actually has spawned a bunch of memes as well. So it's very timely, but it could also be perceived as product placement. And I wonder how often that's going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, plus and minus, right? I mean, Austen talk apparently is already a big thing.
Which is great.
Yeah. I feel like when a company is involved, when companies jump onto these movements, they're inevitably going to find some way of being commercial.
It's a what do you expect moment, isn't it?
It is. But the question here is, are we missing a beat by not being on TikTok, Lynn? Is that where the show is evolving to? Like your face in itself.
I know so little and I'm so ill-prepared. I guess I need to go engage with the laureates. And maybe that will give me a better sense.
We'll be our own laureates within this book talk of two.
Well,
book
yes.
Talk of two.
Yeah. Book duo talk, I suppose.
This is why we're not on TikTok.
This is what I'm saying. So I'm not ready, Sharmila. I wasn't ready for that question. And I'm not ready for book talk.
But that said, I think if you just need to spend some time and if you like books, honestly, looking up Book Talk or even Bookstagram, hours of entertainment, hours of fun, let us know. Do you turn to social media, TikTok, Instagram and the like for your book fix? You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio, write to us at buythebook@bfm.my.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.